Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 41 of our weekly podcast, Then and Now. I'm your host, John Shomo. This week, we will look at anniversaries, birthdays, events for the week of December 6th through 12th. We will tackle three current event topics, and we'll get to our three good questions segment near the end of the podcast. If you have any comments, questions for us, please get in touch at our email address, which is threegoodquestions@gmail.com. First off, are we about to have a snow day here in Northeast Ohio? We down in the greater Akron area had missed the recent lake effect onslaught that hit far northeastern Ohio and up by Buffalo and the western parts of Michigan, etc. We missed those by 30 to 40 miles. We can see the grass here right now. But we are due to get some snow on Thursday, along with very high wind gusts here in the Akron area. So we could be looking at the first snow day of the year for the kids on Thursday, December the 5th. We'll see. I've already made my call, and we'll see if I got it right. Okay, looking at the facts and events and birthdays. December 6th, 1877, Thomas Edison, Ohio native, first demonstrated a sound recording, which became known as the phonograph, record player, etc., on and on and on in technology. Edison's first sound recording was Mary Had a Little Lamb, of all things. On December 6th, 1917, it's Independence Day, celebrating independence for the country of Finland. They got independence from Russia. Russia was going through some things in 1917, and I guess Finland kind of took advantage of that and became an independent nation. So happy Independence Day, Finns. On December 6, 1923, the first ever presidential radio address was delivered by the guy they nicknamed Silent Cal, very ironically, Calvin Coolidge. Gave the first ever talk, a brief talk on the radio. Never talked very much, really, at all. There's a story I used to tell in my history class of two women who were in line for a reception at the White House during the Coolidge years. And the one turned to her friend and said, "I'll bet you that I can get President Coolidge to say more than two words." And her friend said, "Okay, you're on." So the two women got up to the president and introduced themselves. And the one said, "Mr. President, I bet my friend that I could get you to say more than two words." And Coolidge, very deadpan, looked at her and said, "You lose." She lost. Vice President Gerald Ford was sworn in as VP via the 25th Amendment on December 6, 1973, in the wake of the resignation of President Nixon's Vice President Spiro Agnew. Vice President Ford was vice president for about, 9 months. Before he became president in August of 1974. The great Roy Orbison, a solo artist extraordinaire, member of the Traveling Wilburys late in his life, died of a heart attack on December 6, 1988, a couple of days after his last show, which was delivered up in Highland Heights, Ohio, at the Front Row Theater. One of the great voices of rock and roll history, very distinctive. You always knew when it was Roy Orbison singing. Birthdays for December 6th include one of the guys that should be included in the discussion of great quarterbacks in NFL history, Otto Graham. The Cleveland Browns quarterback for the first 10 years of their existence, played in a championship game every year. He was in the professional leagues, first the All-American League and then the NFL. Otto Graham, born December 6th, 1921. If the judgment of a quarterback, if a great deal of the judgment of great quarterbacks is did they win, nobody was better than Otto Graham. Speaking of other Browns quarterbacks, not as notable, I guess, former Heisman Trophy winner and Browns first-round draft pick Johnny Manziel will be 32 on December 6th. And Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Milwaukee Bucks will be 30 on December 6th. MVP of the NBA, led the Bucks to a championship a couple of years ago. Giannis will be 30 on December 6th. December 7th, that one's easy, right? December 7th, 1941 changed America for good. That was the attack, as you well know, on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii. Most Americans really didn't know where Pearl Harbor was on December 7th, 1941, but they soon found out it was the Pacific home of the U.S. Navy and launched us into the Second World War against Japan first, and then in a few days, Germany and Italy as well. one of the seminal events of the 20th century, and changed forever America's turn to isolationism, we hope. I'm a little scared that the incoming administration is a bit more isolationist than they need to be. But Pearl Harbor should have taught us that lesson. The launch of Apollo 17, the last manned moon mission, was December 7th, 1972. I'd have lost all the money I could have possibly bet 52 years ago if you'd have told me, hey, this is the last time we're going to go to the moon for over 50 years with men on board. Can't believe it, but it's true. The first ever use of instant replay on television was December 7th, 1963, during CBS telecast of the Army-Navy game from Philadelphia. This was the Army-Navy game featuring the Heisman Trophy winner Roger Staubach of Navy. The game had been pushed back a week due to the assassination of President Kennedy, who was a big fan of that Navy team in particular. They had a bond, actually. He visited them at camp a couple of times before the season, was looking forward very much to attending the game. And it was the first event where people actually cheered at anything following the assassination. But anyway, late in the game, Raleigh Stitchway, the Army quarterback, rolled out and scored a touchdown, and CBS replayed it using videotape. Such technology. Lindsey Nelson, the announcer, the great announcer, was doing the game on CBS, and he had to say, "No, Raleigh Stitchway has not scored again. This is a videotape replay of the play that you just saw." We take it so for granted now. There are a dozen replay cameras at NFL games and big college games from all angles, and they'll show two or three before the next play sometimes. That's the first time it was ever used. The tape no longer exists. It was taped over. CBS used it to tape an episode of I Love Lucy later. So we have no videotape of the first use of instant replay. Birthdays on September 7th. Greg Allman, the late Greg Allman of the Allman Brothers, born December 7th, 1947. Born that same day, 77 years old now, the Hall of Fame catcher, maybe the greatest catcher in baseball history, probably would get my vote. Johnny Bench of the Cincinnati Reds will be 77 on December 7th. The great Larry Bird, one of my favorite athletes ever to watch. Got to see him play live once in the mid-80s. Larry Bird will be 68. There isn't enough time left in the year for us to tell Larry Bird stories. I would urge you to go on YouTube and look for Larry Bird stories. It's so funny. Particularly a lot of the black athletes that have been in the NBA and were his contemporaries, they just can't believe that guy. He trash-talked incessantly and then backed it up, and he's held in awe by a lot of the guys that played with and against him over the years. Happy birthday, Larry. Terrell Owens, the great wide receiver, 49ers, Cowboys. Terrell Owens will be 51 on December 7th. Moving to December 8th. The famous 1940 National Football League Championship game was played on that date. The Chicago Bears in Washington defeated the Washington Redskins, as they were then known, 73-0 in the biggest rout in championship history. George Halas just ran right over them with his new T-formation offense. Sammy Ball was still playing for the Redskins, and a reporter asked him after the game, "Well, what would have happened? What could have happened if you hadn't have thrown that interception in the end zone early in the game, Sammy?" He said, "Well, I guess it could have been 73-7. The Bears were just that dominant that day. As we mentioned previously, the United States and Great Britain declared war on Japan, December 8th, 1941, a very stirring speech by President Roosevelt in the House of Representatives chamber to the nation and to the Congress. Events on December 8th. We can't get by without mentioning the very, very tragic assassination of the great John Lennon in New York City on December 8th, 1980. He was shot as he returned from a recording studio in New York by a deranged fan whose name I have not mentioned since that day, and I won't now. Just words can't explain how down most of us were of a certain age when that happened, and it's still a very painful memory, to say the least. John Glenn, the great Ohioan, passed away in his 90s, I believe, on December 8th, 2016. Our son Matt was very privileged to be invited to his memorial service at Ohio State. Matt was a graduate of the John Glenn School of Public Policy and was able to go to that event. Birthdays on December 8th. Sammy Davis Jr., one of the great entertainers of the 20th century, born December 8th, 1925. The great Jim Morrison, vocalist, lead singer of The Doors, born December 8th, 1943. Another one of those great musicians who died at the age of 27. Terry Hatcher, the actress. They're real and they're spectacular. If you're a Seinfeld fan, you know what I'm talking about. Terry Hatcher will be 60 on December 8th. And Hall of Fame pitcher Mike Mussina, Yankees, Orioles, mostly. Mike Mussina will be 56. A couple more here. NASCAR star Kevin Harvick will be 49. Former NFL quarterback Philip Rivers will be 43. And entertainer-singer Nicki Minaj will be 42. On to December 9th, the computer mouse, which I'm using right now. Well, not this one. That thing was first developed on December 9th, 1968. What a great thing that is for people like me who hate using these mouse or these pads on these laptops. Former Speaker of the House, the late Tip O'Neill of Massachusetts, born December 9th, 1912. The actor Kirk Douglas was born December 9th, 1916. He just died like 5 years ago. He lived to be 103. Deacon Jones, NFL Hall of Famer, one of the great pass rushers of all time, born December 9th, 1938. Dick Butkus, who we lost this past year, about a year ago. Dick Butkus, the Chicago Bears' famous middle linebacker who kind of epitomized football in the 1960s from a defensive standpoint. Dick Butkus, born December 9th, 1942. Former Cavaliers guard, World B. Free, once known as Lloyd Free, and he could really shoot it from long range. World B. Free is 71 on December 9th, as is the actor John Malkovich. And Donny Osmond will be 66 on December 9th. Welcome to the club, Donny. December 10th, Wyoming became the first state to allow women to vote. December 10th, 1869. If I were to ask you randomly to name the state you thought was the first one to allow women to vote, most of you probably wouldn't pick Wyoming, but they were the first. Mississippi became the 20th state on December 10th, 1817. The Treaty of Paris of 1898 was signed on December 10th, ending what we know as the Spanish-American War. President Theodore Roosevelt won the Nobel Peace Prize, first U.S. president to do so, on December 10th, 1906. He had negotiated a peace deal between Russia and Japan the previous year. The poet Emily Dickinson, born December 10th, 1830, and Cincinnati Bengals quarterback, former Athens High School quarterback, Ohio State Buckeye and LSU Tiger, Joe Burrow will be 28. On December 11th, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill was founded December 11th, 1789. They're looking for a head football coach, FYI. Indiana became the 19th state on December 11th, 1816. King Edward VIII of Great Britain abdicated the throne, gave up being king to marry the woman he loved, who had two strikes against her in British society at that time. One, she was an American, and two, she had been divorced. Those were no-nos. He had to choose between remaining king and marrying her. He chose to marry her. Edward VIII abdicated it, gave it up on December 11th, 1938. Apollo 17, mentioned a few minutes ago, landed on the moon December 11th, 1972. Founding father from Virginia, George Mason, born December 11th, 1725. Senator John Kerry, Secretary of State, former longtime senator of Massachusetts, Democratic presidential candidate in 2004. I voted for him, FYI. I think he's a great American in general, has devoted his life to serving his country, served in the Navy during Vietnam, etc. John Kerry will be 81. And Jermaine Jackson of the Jackson Five will be 70. December 12th, last one for today, a lot on December 12th. Pennsylvania became known as the Keystone State. They're the second state to ratify the Union, December 12th, 1787. Baseball rules, which we'll talk a little bit about in our topics today. The Baseball Rules Committee changed a rule on a ball bouncing into the stands. A ball bouncing into the stands was a home run until 1930. They changed that rule. They made it a ground rule double in 1930. John D. Rockefeller Jr. gifted 6 blocks in Manhattan to the United Nations. That'd be worth a little bit of money, that real estate, wouldn't it? On December 12, 1946. Ohio State's star halfback and punter and all-around player Vic Janowitz won the Heisman Trophy on December 12, 1950. Gale Sayers, the late great Gale Sayers of the Chicago Bears, the Kansas Comet, scored 6 touchdowns on a muddy Wrigley Field on December 12, 1965, as the Bears walloped the San Francisco 49ers 61-20. The U.S. Supreme Court issued the Bush v. Gore decision, ending the recount of the controversial 2000 election and basically giving Texas Governor George W. Bush the presidency. John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, born on that date, December 12, 1745. One of America's greatest entertainers, Frank Sinatra, born December 12, 1915. Also a great entertainer. If you were ever sick at home from school in the 70s or 80s, you probably watched Price is Right, starring Bob Barker. Yes, Bob Barker, who just passed away recently, born 101 years ago on December 12th. Hall of Fame, then St. Louis Hawks forward, the great Bob Pettit, will be 92. He's still alive, one of the great players in NBA history. And last but not least, talented singer Dionne Warwick, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, will be 84 on December 12th. That'll do it for our events and anniversaries and birthdays for this week. Let's move to some current topics. Number one, we've been updating the House of Representatives, the U.S. House of Representatives elections that were still outstanding. It appears that they have all been decided. The last one was a flip from Republican to Democrat in California by less than 200 votes. So it does appear to be a 220 to 215 Republican majority. It's a 2-seat gain for the Democrats over what had been in the current Congress. They were 222 to 213 in that election. However, let's remember, again, 2 Republican representatives have been picked by President-elect Trump to join the new administration, plus Matt Gaetz, who was elected this year, has resigned already. And there will be special elections to fill those seats. So in reality, in the first few months of 2025, we'll see a 217 to 215 House majority for the Republicans. That means the Republicans cannot afford to lose a single member on any vote. They had a tough enough time with it 222 to 213. If you recall, it took them a dozen or more ballots before they actually picked a speaker 2 years ago. It is a more narrow margin this year. It's the narrowest margin after an election, I think, in, if not recent history, in all of American history. So the House of Representatives is going to be interesting to watch. Can Speaker Johnson, assuming they elect him as Speaker again, I probably shouldn't assume that, can he keep them together up there on Capitol Hill? We'll see. Secondly, we'll go to baseball. Major League Commissioner Rob Manfred the Wonder Dog, as I call him, that's a reference to an old 1960s cartoon named Tom Terrific. Rob Manfred has floated an idea that he calls the golden at-bat. Here's what he's floating. He proposes, or he says, well, there's been some discussion about it at the winter meetings, that one time per game at max, the team batting can usurp whoever's due up next in the batting order and put their best player up in a key situation once a game. Let's give an example of what he's talking about. For instance, let's say the Guardians are playing a tight game against the Yankees and they've got 2 men on and 2 out in the 9th inning and they're down a run and Austin Hedges comes up. And Austin Hedges is a great catcher defensively. They've re-signed him. They very much value him, but he can't hit his weight. Okay, he hits about .150. So they would obviously want to pinch hit for Austin Hedges in this situation. Well, instead of traditional pinch hitting, if this rule were implemented, easy for me to say, they could put Jose Ramirez up, even though he was due up four guys after Hedges, maybe. They could put Jose Ramirez up in that situation, just pluck him off the bench and put him right in. I can't even begin to describe how dumb of an idea this is. Manfred just put it in his hip pocket and forget about it. This is terrible. It wrecks the whole strategy, the whole idea. Think of all the great moments in baseball history that have been provided by guys maybe at the bottom of the lineup. Bill Mazeroski's home run, for instance, in 1960. There's all kinds of examples of guys near the bottom of the batting order coming up big in huge situations that are just great moments in baseball history, let alone it messes with the game too much. Some of his recent changes, I'll give him credit for some things. The pitch clock, I think, has been helpful. Banning the shift, I think, has been helpful. I'm not sure about the Manfred man, if you know what I'm talking about, the runner at second to start extra innings. I'm not a big fan of that. And I don't mind them tinkering with something here and there. But this golden at-bat idea needs to be squelched and stomped out right away. So get in touch with your local team and tell them this is a horrible idea. I think it's a horrible idea anyway. Okay, breaking news, if you will. This morning, as we record on Wednesday early afternoon here, the CEO of United Healthcare, a man by the name of Brian Thompson, was murdered this morning as he crossed the street to enter a Midtown Manhattan hotel. United Healthcare was having an investors conference in Manhattan this week. He was gunned down by a guy. They have the video footage of him. Got on a bike and rode away, and New York City cops are looking for him right now. It looks like an old-fashioned hit, if you know what I'm talking about. Not random at all. He was followed. He was searched out. The guy shot him in the back as he walked across the street to the hotel. It's certainly a targeted hit. I guess in one sense that shouldn't surprise us very much, because guns seem to be a lot easier to get in the United States than, you know, healthcare. But anyway. It's a shame that this murder took place, and let's hope they catch the perpetrator. All right. Moving on to our three good questions segment. I'm going to answer my own question here from last week, which was, should the Browns renovate or build on the lakefront or build in Brook Park? Three different ideas. Renovating the current stadium, building another one, maybe where Burke Lakefront Airport is, and or building a new facility, which would presumably be a dome, in Brook Park. I'm as much of a traditionalist as you can probably get in terms of sports. I suppose there's people more traditional. I'm way on the traditionalist side of the spectrum, let's put it that way. And I love the fact that they're playing on the same ground, basically, that they've played on for their entire existence. But where's the money best spent? Do you renovate? Do you pour hundreds and hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars into the old site? Or do you make something that's going to last and bring in revenue like nobody's business? That would be Brook Park. If you'd build a dome stadium out in Brook Park, and they would propose to build it on the old Ford site there. If you're familiar with Hopkins Airport, it's after you get off of 271, and it's in between 271 and the airport and 480, just to the east of the airport, if you will, across the road, the old Ford site. That's where they're proposing building a dome and shops and restaurants and so forth. If you've ever been to New England and see where the Patriots play in Foxborough, they call the whole facility Patriot Place, and there's all kinds of shopping and things that go on there in addition to the Patriots Stadium. This would be a year-round thing. The biggest complaint about the current stadium that I have is it only gets used about, I don't know what, a dozen, 15 times a year. That's a lot of precious ground to cover for something that only gets used 15 times a year. If you build a dome, and I loved the snow globe game the other day. I'm as much of a traditionalist as you'll find usually. But man, financially, as a benefit to Northeast Ohio, et cetera, I think the dome and a build around of a dome in Brook Park would be far more beneficial in the long run to Northeast Ohio. So, you know, they're going to haggle over it, and Cleveland's not great at getting things done. They've done a lousy job of developing their lakefront if you compare it to, let's say, Chicago or Milwaukee. And there's probably a couple other places that I'm not thinking about. The lakefront really suffers by comparison up in Cleveland. They could do a lot more with that site, in other words, where the stadium is now. So my two cents is build it in Brook Park and they will come. Okay. Before we go today, I'd like to pitch our other podcast, The Fifth Quarter, a podcast that deals with college football. Our next episode of The Fifth Quarter will drop after Championship Weekend. Championship Weekend is upcoming. The nine FBS conferences are playing their championship games, three of them Friday, six of them Saturday. The committee will announce their final rankings and who's going to play when and where on Sunday afternoon. And we'll have our next episode after that all happens. We'll be able also to preview the first round games of the college football playoff, including probably one game at the Horseshoe in Columbus. So if you're looking for good college football content, look us up. It's The Fifth Quarter with me as your host, and it's on Spotify. Again, if you have a question, if you want to get in contact with us about either one of our podcasts, feel free to do so. It's great to hear from you. The email address is 3goodquestions, spelled out T-H-R-E-E, 3goodquestions, at gmail.com. That will do it for this week. As always, we appreciate you listening, choosing us out there in the podcastosphere. Shout out to my former colleague, my friend Sue Whitman, who says I'm third on her podcast list of listening this year, behind Matthew Stafford's wife and the Kelsey brothers. So I guess I'm in pretty good company there. Thanks a lot, Sue, for listening. Take care, and we'll see you next week at brunch with Lisa, right? Okay. Again, this is John Shomo. This is Then and Now. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Stay warm, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.